In this day of pluralism's leveling of all religions, it would be difficult to find a more unpopular, even offensive, conviction to hold than this idea that we are advocating here, that Jesus is the only way to God, the only way of salvation. I'm Fred Zaspel, and I'm talking today with Chris Morgan, Steve Wellum, Todd Miles, Dan Strange, and David Sills. Our topic for discussion is Jesus the only way. Is faith in Christ required for salvation? Chris, Steve, Todd, Dan, David, welcome. Thanks to all of you for joining us in this. And so our listeners can learn your voices. Maybe each of you could introduce yourself with your name and tell us where you teach.
Chris Morgan, California Baptist University. I teach theology and I'm a dean of the School of Christian Ministry.
I'm Steve Wellum, and I teach at Southern Baptist Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, in the area of systematic theology.
I'm Todd Miles. I teach at Western Seminary. I teach theology and church history and biblical theology and hermeneutics.
I'm David Sills. I teach Christian missions and cultural anthropology at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary.
I'm Dan Strange. I am the acting principal at Oak Hill Theological College in London, and I'm a tutor in culture, religion, and public theology.
Okay, what I'd like to do is approach the discussion in four general steps. First, we'll define our terms and clarify the opposing positions in this inclusivist-exclusivist debate. And then second, we'll examine some of the direct biblical teaching related to it. And then we'll explore some of the biblical explanations or the rationale for that conclusion. And then we'll answer some related questions and challenges. Okay, first, define for us the alternatives in this discussion. Precisely what are the claims and the varieties of inclusivism and of exclusivists? If you would, sketch out the various viewpoints in that discussion.
Well, there's, if I can jump in here, there's typically three being viewed, and yet the challenge is immense because those three have created, there's so many nuances within the three, sometimes it's more helpful to go beyond three. So in an essay in Faith Comes by Hearing, I suggested actually nine, which might make it a little too tricky for our purposes, but I think it might be good just to make sure we know that there are nuances.
Mm-hmm.
So I divide them into these. First, church exclusivism, the idea that outside the church there is no salvation. That would be, you know, not an evangelical position. Gospel exclusivism, the idea that people must hear the gospel and trust Christ to be saved. That would be pretty standard historic evangelicalism. Special revelation exclusivism, people must hear the gospel and trust Christ to be saved, though God may choose to send them special revelation in an extraordinary way by a dream, vision, miracle, angelic message, something like that. Sometimes that's viewed as preparatory in gospel exclusivism and special revelation exclusivism. That might be enough that they would trust Christ. They're still trusting Christ. They're still knowing about Christ. The gospel's still being understood. Fourth view would be agnosticism, not the idea that there's no God, but that we can't know the answer to this question. Sometimes there would be people who would be pessimistic about it, that it's very, very, very unlikely that anybody that doesn't know, have never heard of Jesus would be saved. Others would be optimistic about it. Well, hopefully they will be. Maybe there's a good chance that they will be, things like that. Then there's what I call general revelation inclusivism, general revelation inclusivism, that people can respond to God in saving faith through seeing him in general revelation, that's enough, that God has communicated himself in creation and conscience, in the image of God, and sometimes in providence, that people might know enough about God that they can trust Christ in that regard. They can respond to the God that they do know through faith. Another would be world religions inclusivism. This is the idea that even they can be a proponent and an active proponent in their religion, but they can trust in the God that they do understand, and that would enable them to have a genuine relationship with God. And then post-mortem evangelism. That's the idea that they'll have an opportunity to trust Christ after death, and that some would. 8, universalism, that ultimately everybody makes it to heaven, everybody will be saved. And 9, pluralism. There's a whole bunch of varieties of the last two especially, but pluralism. Many will experience salvation as they understand it. They embrace their own version of the real, and though the nuances are many, that, you know, there are many, many good roads. So those would be a lot of the varieties. Normally it's boiled down to exclusivism, inclusivism, pluralism, and then those various varieties would fall under each.
And it will be interesting. It's important to note, I think, also how those words sound to people who maybe don't come from the Christian tradition or don't know anything about Christianity, how emotive they sound. And that's why there's been lots of discussion as to whether those three terms are even helpful. You know, who wants to be an exclusivist? Everyone wants to be inclusive. So I think I think part of the debate, if you come from an exclusivist position, is that you're almost starting behind. It's not a level playing field when you want to describe something as exclusive, whereas I'd want to say I'm an exclusivist, but there's in loads of ways I'd want to say the gospel is so inclusive. And so just the way that we use those terms, I think emotionally and polemically, is important, and we need to define the difference between a theological description and lots of different ways in which we'd want to say the gospel is incredibly inclusive.